When you dig down to the core of a human being, you find an animal, snarling, vicious, ravenous. At the center of every saint, philosopher, or soldier is hunger. Today, we're telling the story of a man who found that primal appetite and kept on feeding it. We're talking about the Colorado cannibal.
History is messy,
weird, wild, anything but boring.
We're rainy day rabbit holes.
Exploring the unhinged side of history, politics, and culture.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
We've all heard of the Donner Party, the tragic story of American pioneers trapped in the Sierra Nevada mountains who resorted to the greatest taboo to survive. But today, I'm bringing you a dark, gruesome tale from our favorite era, the 1800s.
Yes.
That makes the Donner Party look like a church potluck.
Oh.
This is the real-life story that inspired Robert Carlyle's character in the 1999 movie Ravenous, as well as Cannibal, the musical.
The musical.
The 1993 black comedy directed.
He's so tasty.
Yeah, right? So this was directed by South Park's Trey Parker.
Oh, that makes sense.
It was written, directed, and performed by Trey Parker.
Makes sense.
So I guess it's time for a content warning. Today, we will be talking about murder, butchery, and cannibalism. And I will try my best to give a trigger warning before describing anything particularly gruesome, so you can skip ahead, but you have been fairly warned. Also,
what
this
about
is...
me?
You're trapped.
I could have to sit through it.
Also, this one is a meaty boy.
Oh, God.
Erp. Of a story. So I was forced to split it into two episodes. So make sure that you're subscribed and turn on auto downloads too, so that you don't miss anything next week. Okay, before we get started, I have to ask you a couple of questions, Jody.
Uh-oh.
First off,
quizzed.
I think we all know the answer to this. Have you seen the 1999 movie Ravenous?
Yeah. Oh, Ravenous.
With
no.
Robert Carlyle
and Guy Pearce. I thought
you
were going to ask me about Hannibal the Cannibal. I was going to say, yes, I've seen Silence of the Lambs.
But
dang
not
it.
Cannibal the Musical.
No. No, I was all ready to shock you and say yes, but I anticipated the wrong movie. No, I have not.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I knew that answer. Ravenous is a 1999 horror film where a cowardly U.S. officer named John Boyd, played by Guy Pearce, plays dead as his unit is destroyed during the Mexican-American War. He's placed on a cart of dead bodies and blood drips into his mouth, which gives him the strange strength to capture enemy headquarters. He gets promoted to captain, but his superiors know of his cowardice, so they exile him to Fort Spencer, a remote outpost in Sierra Nevada. Not long after, a stranger arrives with a terrifying story. According to this stranger, his wagon train became lost in the mountains due to the inexperience of their guide, a man named Colonel Ives. The party eventually had to resort to cannibalism to survive, but Colonel Ives became crazed. He developed a voracious appetite and started to murder members of the party just to eat them. The stranger fled to the fort. The men of the fort send out a search party to look for survivors, despite a dire warning by the fort's Native American scout, George. He warns them about the Wendigo, that anyone who consumes the flesh of a human becomes a demon, cursed with an insatiable appetite for more.
For more. He became a Wendigo.
They find that the cave that the party sheltered in and discovered that the stranger is actually Colonel Ives. He kills everyone except Boyd, who escapes by jumping off a cliff. Now with a broken leg, Boyd is forced to eat the flesh of one of his deceased companions to survive. And that's all I'm going to tell you about the movie. You're going to have to go watch it.
It's a teaser.
Maybe that's what you and Keith tonight. Need to do tonight.
Yeah.
It's a romantic date night,
right?
Of cannibalism.
Yeah. It's a comedy. It's like a rom-com.
You should have a little steak tartare for dinner.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Should I set up the whole date?
Should.
He'd probably really like that.
I love you so much, I could eat you.
Yes. Well, our anniversary is coming up. Maybe I'll save it.
You should do a cannibalism-themed dinner.
Yes.
So the monster who inspired that movie, he was real. Very, very real. Jody, here's another question for you. Okay, so if you and I were trapped in the mountains and I died,
mm-mm.
would you eat me to
no.
survive?
No.
Even if I was already dead?
Yeah.
And you're going to die?
I would die. Well, why wouldn't you? I'm a quitter, and I would just roll.
I give you explicit permission to eat my butt.
Okay. My first reaction is no, I'll just lay down and die next to you. But then I remember I'm accidentally a fighter. Like when I don't even want to be a fighter, all of a sudden I'm like, I'm a survivor. I'm like, yeah, I probably would. And then I'd chat with you and tell you how delicious you were and thank you for my nourishment. I'd sit you up. I'd start with your, just kidding.
You have to start with my butt cheeks.
Butt cheeks. Yeah. Yeah. But then I'd sit you up so I couldn't see that part.
Yes, there you go.
And then we would pretend to have a dinner together.
You got to cut flaps in my pants.
Yeah.
So you can just pull them down.
Yeah, that's a good
idea. Carve off a little bit and then just put them back up.
Yeah. Make sure I have my good knife with me.
Well, would you kill me to survive?
No, absolutely not.
What if I
killed
you
if you're being really annoying, you are my last nerve. If you're whining about the suffering.
We are going away together next week, and this could happen. We could be trapped in that trailer in Gold Bar. Well, okay, we can joke about it now, and the jokes help keep the horror at bay. But in the mid-1800s, out in the unforgiving Colorado wilderness, it wasn't just a hypothetical. It was a frightening possibility. This was a place still being drawn on maps. Winter arrived early, help was never close enough, and people vanished with alarming regularity. The mountains punished the unprepared brutally.
It's how it always starts. Cannibalism.
Oh.
The brutal weather, the mountains.
Yeah, it'll do it to you. But summertime in Colorado was a different story. Warm breezes tickled your cheek as you hike through untouched, pristine landscapes. In August of 1874, John Randolph, an illustrator for Harper's Weekly, a magazine that romanticized and promoted the idea of manifest destiny, was out documenting the awe-inspiring wilderness of Colorado in an area called Slumgullion Pass. In a pine-shaded gulch rimmed with hemlock trees near the banks of the Gunnison River, he made a discovery that would haunt him for the rest of his life. Now, here's your trigger warning. Skip ahead like 30 to 60 seconds. If you have a weak stomach, this gets a little graphic.
Wow. You're going to give us the deets.
Right up top here. Lying in a jumbled heap on the ground were the remains of five men.
Oh.
All in various states of decomposition. One man was missing his head entirely. The rest of the men had jagged holes in their skulls, suggesting they were struck by a hatchet. Scavengers and the ravages of nature had been taking their toll on the corpses, but it was still obvious that something terrible had happened. Their torsos and much of their bodies had been flayed. Sections of muscle had been carefully removed from their legs, arms, and buttocks. They had been butchered like cattle. Among the scattered remains were the remnants of clothes and blankets. All of this alongside strips of dried skin and what appeared to be the gristle of cooked human flesh. It appeared to the coroner that the men had been killed in their sleep. A couple of the men had defensive wounds on their hands and arms as if they had been awakened mid-attack and tried to fend off the hatchet. John Randolph wasn't about to stop working, so he sketched the scene in gory detail. It was later published in Harper's Weekly, and I'm going to make sure that it's on the website if you're interested. It didn't take long for the area to be named Dead Man's Gulch and the plateau to be called Cannibal Plateau because people are terrible.
We have a lot of great names across the country.
We do.
I mean, it always makes you wonder, like, what was happening when they named this place? Now I know.
So who were these men? And more importantly, who was the butcher who did this to them? Answers to these questions and more after this short break. Welcome back. Hey, Jody.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know we have a Patreon?
Mm.
For just $5.
Since when?
Since when? Right now.
Oh, whoa.
For just $5 per month, you could be listening to all of our episodes ad-free, plus you get bonus episodes and more. So head on over to rainydayrabbitholes.com to check it out, and we really appreciate your support. Okay, back to the nightmare. We're going to back up a bit. After the Treaty of 1868, which created a massive reservation for the Ute native people. The Los Pinos Indian Agency was formed near Sagawachee, I think that's how it's pronounced, yeah. Colorado. This agency was created to distribute food and supplies to the native peoples on the reservation, teach them farming techniques, and otherwise try to make them a bit more to our liking. You know, white.
White, yes. Lighter in color, bluer in the eye.
A little more Christian. Thank you. Yeah. In 1874, it was mostly a handful of wooden shacks, a communal mess hall, a stable, and a one-room school. On April 16th, 1874, the men of the agency were eating breakfast when a scraggly, bearded stranger stumbled into camp. He carried a rifle, a satchel, and a metal coffee pot containing hot coals from his fire. Which is a good way to carry your hot coals so you didn't have to relight your fire.
Oh, got it. I was thinking that through. Like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, because especially...
Is it keeping you warm,
if you
too,
didn't I'd have, imagine? If you didn't have flint
yeah.
and something else, you could just take coals from your fire and use it to light your next fire.
And I'm sure you could put it somewhere that kind of keeps you toasty if you're
cold. Yeah, exactly. He begged for food and a place to sleep, claiming he had almost starved to death in the mountains. The men gave him food, but he immediately vomited.
Huh.
He claimed his stomach had shrunk from starvation, and he asked for whiskey instead, like you do when you're starving.
Yeah, calms the tummy.
Yeah, right up. His piercing blue eyes were set slightly too far apart and looked somewhat wild. His beard was matted and dirty, and he was missing his two front teeth. The men got the impression that he had been through something horrible, and also that he might be a little mentally unstable.
Looked a little crazed.
Yeah. He told the men a terrifying tale. He said that he had been hired by five gold prospectors to guide them to Breckenridge. Instead of waiting for spring like reasonable people, they decided to strike out across the San Juan Mountains from Salt Lake City in the winter, desperate to get to the gold claims first. So there had been a new group of gold claims discovered in Breckenridge. And so they were like, we got to get there before everybody else. Everybody else was smart and said, we're going to go in the spring. And they were like, now we're going to go in the winter. But according to the stranger, he had become snowblind. He claimed he was a drag on the party, so they gave him a rifle and a few tins of food and abandoned him.
Just left him.
Just like Hugh Glass, promising to send help later. He claimed he recovered from the blindness and set out on his own, but got lost. He said that he survived on roots and rosebuds. He even claimed that he had to boil and eat his own leather shoes. So then he just wrapped his feet in blankets and rags. But something was off. These men had seen starvation victims before, skin draped over skeletons. This stranger's cheeks were round, and he looked well-fed.
Oh.
And what starving man turns down a steak for a shot of whiskey? Meet Alfred G. Packer. Born in Pennsylvania in 1842, Packer was a drifter. He worked as a cabinet maker, then a shoemaker. When the Civil War broke out, he enlisted in the Union Army, but was discharged 8 months later without seeing combat. Parker suffered from epilepsy, and his seizures made him a liability. He tried again a year later in the Iowa Cavalry, but was discharged again for the same reason. So Packer moved west, working as a hunter, wagon teamster, miner, and guide. Now, you might start to feel bad for the guy, but rein that in.
Tame it down. Calm it down.
By all accounts, Alfred Packer was a dick.
Oh,
people said he was lazy, demanding, and as a guide, he had the habit of getting constantly lost, which is something you want in your guide, for sure.
I think that makes you a failure at that job.
Yeah. He argued constantly, picked fights, and was a pathological liar.
Excellent.
He had even been jailed for 90 days after being caught in a brothel by Mormon authorities. He was also rumored to have killed a hunting partner. All in all, a real upstanding guy.
Yeah, like he was weird looking. He was... had to be smelly because we know it's the 1800s.
I mean, that's just par for the course. Everybody does.
And he was a giant asshole.
Yeah,
like, he had it all. So appealing.
So by late 1873, the gold rush was in full swing. A party of 20 men left Salt Lake City to head for the gold fields of Breckenridge. Near Provo, they met Packer. He told them it was their lucky day because he was a master guide who knew the San Juan Mountains like the back of his hand. He had no provisions, not even a rifle, just a Colt revolver. But he offered them $25 to join. They needed a guide.
Like he paid them $25? Or they paid him?
For a share in the provisions.
Oh, okay.
Because he had nothing.
Oh, got it, got it.
So he's like, I'll give you $25. You can give me some provisions.
And I'll guide you.
And I'll guide you. Yeah. They needed a guide. So they said, sure.
Yeah.
It quickly became apparent that Packer had completely made that up. They wasted days getting lost. Packer was lazy, greedy with rations, and suspiciously obsessed with how much money everyone had brought.
He was picking his meals based on how much money they had.
He fought constantly with a member named Frank Miller, and another member, Preston Nutter, called him a shining fraud. To make matters worse, he had a high-pitched, grating voice and wouldn't shut up.
So in addition to being funny-looking, smelly, and a dick...
I mean, I have all those qualities except for the dick. High-pitched, grating voice and wouldn't shut up? That sounds like me. Hey.
No.
I feel attacked.
Not like you.
One night, Packer had a seizure and fell into the campfire, knocking over the coffee pot. The other men didn't move a muscle to help him. Because this is just goes to show
they're
you
just
how
done
they felt.
With him. Yeah. They're done. All right. Well, at least that's done.
Finally, the leader ran over to save his life. That's how much they hated him.
Wow.
By December, they were lost in heavy snow. Provisions ran out and the men turned to eating horse feet. Thankfully, on January 21st, 1874, they stumbled into the camp of Chief Ure of the Ute tribe. Chief Ure fed them and basically said, "You guys are idiots. The San Juans are impassable in winter. Stay here with us until spring." So he was really kind.
Wow,
like,
yeah, how
he's
sweet.
Like, "Stay with us. We will share everything that we have with you. Just don't go up back out into the mountains."
Yeah.
But gold fever makes you stupid.
Yeah.
Some of the party.
Greed.
Yep. Some of the party wanted to push on. Packer argued that they should cut straight through the mountains. 11 men wisely stayed with the chief. 5 men followed another guide along the river, a safer way that the Ute tribe had shown them. It was just going to take a lot longer. That left 5 men who decided to follow Packer into the frozen hellscape. Their names were George California Noon, Israel Swan, James Humphrey, Frank Butcher Miller, and Shannon Wilson Bell. It was just because he was a butcher.
Oh, got it.
Nothing exciting about that. He was just a butcher.
Well, okay, continue your story. Okay. I was already thinking ahead.
Yeah, no, it was just that was his profession. Israel Swan, the oldest at 65 years old, had lofty ambitions. He hoped to buy up claims, so he had brought $6,000 in cash. That's about $200,000
today.
Yeah,
that I was thinking is a lot of money to be trekking along with.
Wandering around with, yeah.
Holy cow, that is gold.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in cash and gold.
Yeah, like if you were to stumble across this man with this money and had the opportunity to take it, that's the same thing as finding gold.
Yeah. He basically painted a target on his back.
Yeah.
And remember, Packer was obsessed with money. They had minimal food, inadequate clothing, and a guide who was a known fraud. And I'm saying guide with air quotes around it. And that was the last time anyone saw those 5 men alive.
Holy cow.
Fast forward to April. Packer stumbles into the Los Pinos agency alone. While he's recovering, 3 men from the original group, the smart ones who stayed with the chief, arrive at the agency. One of them, Preston Nutter, spots Packer and asks, "Where's the others?" Packer gets agitated. He spins story number 1. He says he got snow blind, his feet froze, and the other men, those cruel bastards, abandoned him to die. But Nutter notices something. Packer is carrying Frank Miller's skinning knife.
So stupid.
Packer claims Miller stuck it in a tree and forgot it. Sure, Jan. Packer claims he's broke, so he sells his rifle for $10. Oh, by the way, that rifle was Israel Swan's rifle. He then heads to the town of Sagawache, where he proceeds to bawl out of control. That $10 from the rifle must have been magic, because he books a room at Dolan's saloon and spends around $100 on whiskey and food.
Wow.
He even offers to lend the saloon owner $300. He's visiting brothels, gambling, and drinking himself silly every day. And since Packer couldn't keep his mouth shut, he regaled the customers with stories of survival that changed every time he told them. People also noticed Packer was carrying several different wallets.
Oh my gosh.
Back at the agency, General Charles Adams puts the pieces together. He knows the missing men were good people who wouldn't abandon a companion. He knows Packer has their stuff. So they send a posse to drag Packer back. When they find him, he's down by a creek, frantically throwing things into the water. Probably those extra wallets.
Oh my.
General Adams confronts him. Where'd you get the money, Packer? Where are the men? Packer acts amazed that the others hadn't arrived yet.
Oh.
He claims a man in Sagawache lent him the money. But everyone in the town confirmed Parker arrived with cash. No one lent him a penny.
And a lot of cash.
Yeah, a lot of cash. And lots of wallets. Who needs that many wallets? Why do you have so many wallets?
He had a lot of cash. Yeah, they didn't only fit in one wallet.
There you go. Just then, two Ute tribesmen ride into town. They hand the general something they found near Packer's old campsite. Strips of dried human flesh.
Yeah. So he's like jerky, human jerky.
Yes. The game was up. And when we come back, we'll hear exactly how Alfred tried to explain away the human jerky in his pocket. Welcome back. Confronted with the evidence of his own butchery, Packer didn't just confess, he collapsed. He falls to his knees and so begs dramatic. For mercy. He says, it would not be the first time that people have been obliged to eat each other when they were hungry. And then he spins story number two, the starvation defense. Packer claims that after leaving the chief's camp, they ran out of food. Hunger changed them. He says he left camp to get firewood, and when he came back, the other men had killed Israel's swan with a hatchet and were eating him. Packer claims he was horrified, but, well, he was hungry, so he joined in. They divided Swan's cash, how convenient, and moved on. Also want to say, this was supposedly happened 10 days out of camp.
Oh, wow.
So when they left camp, they left with enough provisions for 14 days. They thought that it was only going to take them 14 days.
To get over that pass.
But then after 10 days, they were already starving to death.
Because he ate it all. He's well, not good with his rations.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It takes you a lot longer.
Starve, even 10 days.
Yeah.
And you had food.
Yeah.
You left with 14 days of food. Even if you ate it too fast.
Yeah. Even if you left with no food, you're just now getting to starvation.
At the most, you had maybe not had food for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
So you're so hungry that you're going to go crazy and kill one of your party members and eat them at that point? No. Anyway, okay. We're going to keep going. A few days later, they killed Miller, ate him, took his money. Then Humphrey, then Noon. So let's pause for a second here. There's enough meat on one human to sustain 5 people for weeks if you ration it, right?
Yeah. Have you watched Yellow Jackets?
Yes, exactly. You don't die of starvation in 10 days.
And how did they choose like who they're going to kill and eat?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't give.
They go fattest to lightest.
I think that was part of it. Israel Swan. There was some story that maybe he died first because he was the oldest.
Oh.
And then they went by whoever was like the meatiest.
According to his story.
Right. But like, what were they just like having a snack and throwing the rest away?
Well, and it doesn't even sound like when they found the bodies that they were like just bones. So it sounds like there was still meat on each of those bodies.
Yeah. If you've gone through the meat of one body and weeks have gone by and you're starving to death again, maybe then you are crazy and do it. But no, you're like, what? I just had like one hamburger from Israel Swan and I need
another body.
Yeah. He wasn't to my liking.
Right.
I'm sorry. He's, I know this a little is bit really gamey. Gruesome. Oh God. I'm sorry. Ugh. Anyway, Packer claims it came down to just him and Shannon Bell. He says Bell snapped. Bell screamed that he couldn't take it anymore and rushed at Packer with a rifle intending to clobber him over the head. So Packer shot him in the belly with the revolver, then smashed his head in with a hatchet. Self-defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fearing starvation, Packer butchered Bell. There's also 1, 2, 3, 4 bodies that they've killed at this point.
Right.
But he's already fearing starvation.
Right, right.
He butchered Bell, took his money, packed up some of Bell's meat, and hiked out. When he saw the agency, the Los Pinos Indian Agency, over the hill, he threw away the last of the scraps of meat so he wouldn't get caught. And they ended up finding these later.
Oh.
General Adams is skeptical, but he organizes a search party with Packer as the guide. Big mistake. Packer leads them in circles. Yeah. Packer leads them in circles, claiming he's lost. Then, in a moment straight out of a horror movie, Packer tries to murder one of the search party members, Herman Lauder, with a knife he had hidden up his sleeve, Frank Miller's knife.
I knew it.
So they tie him up and they drag him back to jail. In fact, they would tie him to trees at night so he couldn't get away.
Smart.
Now, sitting in a cell, Packer changes his story again. Story number three. Now, he claims they got trapped in a blizzard. They ate their shoes. And then he claims that the men died of exposure one by one, and they only ate them after they died naturally.
So no longer a murder scene, just a natural cause of death. Okay.
Except for Bell, who he still claims he killed in self-defense. Because remember, he shot Bell in the belly. Yeah, so there's obvious, you know.
What about the hatchet marks in their heads? And where's the missing head? I can't wait to hear.
But remember John Randolph, the illustrator, who found the bodies? Mm-hmm. So let's look at the actual evidence. The bodies were found grouped together, not strewn over miles like Packer said.
Yeah.
He said they would move on, somebody else would die, and then they'd eat them. The decomposition showed that some of the men had been dead much longer than others, yet they were all butchered on the same site.
So in one, he stayed in one place and butchered? Okay.
The autopsy suggested Packer surprised them in their sleep. Two men had defensive wounds on their arms. They woke up while being hacked to death. Bell didn't rush Packer. He was shot and then bludgeoned while trying to stand up.
Ugh.
The theory is simple. Packer, a thief and a fraud, saw an opportunity. He led them into the wilderness, and he, in fact, encouraged them to leave that camp without enough provisions. He was one of the reasons that they left unprepared. He led them into the wilderness, waited until they were asleep, and then just slaughtered them for their money.
Mm. And their meat.
Yes. But here's the detail that makes my blood run cold. The detail that suggests Alfred Packer wasn't just a survivor. In the shelter near the bodies, searchers found the men's possessions. They found a broken rifle, but they also found a bag of flour and cans of preserved fruit and peas.
Plenty of food.
I thought you said the provisions ran out, Alfred.
Yeah.
Why turn to cannibalism if there was still flour and fruit in the tent? When you dig down to the core of a human being, you find an animal. And that's what he became out there. The Native American scouts warned about the Wendigo, the hunger that grows the more you feed it. It appeared that Packer didn't eat those men because he had to. He ate them because he liked it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a taste for it. Before he could be tried for these crimes, Packer pulled a Houdini. He had been held in a makeshift log cabin jail for months. The county was sick of paying to feed him. Someone slipped him a key and some supplies, and he vanished into the night.
They let this guy go. Yep. Somebody let him escape. Well, and they're not the person that's going to get killed and eaten.
Right. They're not out there with him.
Yeah. Somebody, I'm sure, is going to get killed and eaten further in the story. Right? I'm just certain of it.
For 9 years, the Colorado cannibal was in the wind. He moved through Arizona, Montana, and finally Wyoming. Until March of 1883. One of the original expedition members, a man named Frenchie Cabazon, stops at a roadhouse in Fort Fetterman, Wyoming. He hears a familiar, high-pitched, annoying laugh from the next room.
No.
He walks in, and there is Alfred Packer, drinking with the owner. Frenchie plays it cool. He introduces himself, and Packer calls himself John Schwartz. But Frenchie knows Packer looks older. And he's wearing crude wooden dentures to replace his missing teeth. Packer is too drunk to recognize his old teammate.
I was wondering.
And when Frenchie says that he's a purveyor of supplies, he goes from town to town and brings supplies, and people will order, and he'll come back and bring supplies. Packer actually asks Frenchie to pick him up some baking soda. So instead of baking soda, Frenchie brings the sheriff. Packer's arrested. So Packer signs a second official confession. So this is story number like four.
Yeah.
Now he claims Bell went crazy and killed everyone else while Packer was out scouting. And Packer only killed Bell when he came back and discovered what happened and Bell attacked him. He describes finding Bell roasting a piece of Frank Miller's leg.
How does he know it's Frank Miller's?
Right. When asked why he didn't say this 9 years ago, he shrugged and said, I was excited. The other story came to mind first.
I was going to say, I hadn't thought of it yet.
Exactly.
Oh, my.
The jury didn't buy it. He was found guilty of premeditated murder and sentenced to hang.
Ooh.
But believe it or not, this wasn't the end of Alfred Packer. Oh, and one quick note. You will find his name being spelled Alfred and Alferd mm-hmm. throughout all of the different resources. He got a tattoo of his own name, but he was illiterate.
Oh,
and
no.
So he gave the tattoo artist the wrong spelling of his name. And so he would go by Alfred or Alferd, just depending on his mood.
Whether his tattoo was showing or not.
Yes, right. So we've had enough gore for today. And we'll pick this up next week with the exciting conclusion of the Colorado Cannibal.
Oh, I'm excited.
Trust me, it gets even wilder.
How?
We're done with the gore, but now we're into
the lore.
The trial stuff.
Ooh,
the
yeah.
legal stuff. Yeah.
Got it.
Steve Edmondson, get excited.
We're going to talk about case law.
Yeah, we are. All right. Well, thanks for hanging in there with me. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the ending. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes, if you forgot already. You can find more stories like this, plus photos and sources at rainydayrabbitholes.com. Our site is built by Letha Davis at easybreezy.com. That's EASYBRZY.
Easy breezy.
It's breezy. Our social media wizard is Logan Hine at Redemption Industries. And you can join our Patreon for bonus episodes and ad-free listening. The link's right there on our website. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a proud member of MSW Media, and this episode was produced and edited by me, Shay.
Master editor.
I wouldn't go that far, but I'm not bad. Not bad.
Not bad editor.
So thanks for listening. Stay curious and
see you down the rabbit hole.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.